Aloha, everybody. Aloha, Natalia.
Aloha, Amanda. Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Hi. Yes, I can hear you perfect.
Good. I hear you great, too. Hi, everyone.
Awesome. So nice to hear your voice, Natalia.
You too. It's been a long time, Amanda.
And awesome to see many of the familiar names that of our guests here today. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. And what I would love to do is encourage any of you for today's call to ask questions or contribute to the conversation, because we want this to be a community call where you feel very comfortable asking any questions that you have about families or health or starting families, children, anything that has to do with families and health and well-being. So, and or not, if there's another topic that's pressing that feels relevant, please raise your hand, and you could do that by pressing 1. And or you can enter a question into the dashboard. So if you go into the email reminder for this call, there's a link that you can click on and submit any questions that you have. And if you'd like to remain anonymous, we can do that for you as well. So, let's talk. We want this to be very interactive. So, Natalia, do you have any topics that you wanted to start with?
I'll bring something up and see where the Stuart leads. Amanda, thank you for that lovely introduction. We really do encourage you all to call in. That's really the point of this, to be here for you. But in the meantime, I guess we can share things that we think may be helpful. One thing I'll be happy to share is that it's really important that people remember that children are going to go out into the world and gather information. And sometimes that can feel kind of scary to parents, especially parents like us who really want nothing but the life force for our children. And, when we see them engaging in things and being charmed by things that we know don't contain the life force and have no power to conduct the life force, we want to just shake them, shake the life force back into them. And, but take heart, because they are meant to gather information, and they're meant to go afar gathering information into places and consuming things and all that is not necessarily in line with their parents. If they were just to be replicas of us, we probably wouldn't evolve very far. And take heart, because they, as much as they are designed to go out and gather, they're also designed to come home to what's right and what's good. And they've got to do both. And I say take heart, because if you stay steady and you are a glorious example of the life force and of all that is good and that can be possible in the human spirit and the highest human potential, they will notice that. They might not look like they're noticing it. They might seem to be taking alternate routes that may scare you, and you might think, well, maybe my kid doesn't see it. But make no mistake, your children have one thing in common. They are wired to identify what is life generating and what is not. And they might spook you sometimes when they look like they don't know the difference, but they do know the difference. And I'll speak from personal experience here. My 13-year-old daughter, for a long time, I just felt like she didn't see what I was presenting for her, and all she could see was the big bad apple living here in the middle of New York City and all the illusionary splendors that were presented before her, and she seemed very hypnotized, very captivated by them. And to a certain degree, she was, and to a certain degree, she probably still is. But I didn't let myself get too nervous. I just kind of kept at what I was doing and let her go in a way, just kind of let her be who she was going to be without being too attached to it. And I just see this this young woman, really. She's, 13 and a half, and she's really like a young woman. And I see her really getting it now, really coming around and spending more time with me and wanting to just kind of get to know me, my world more. And it doesn't need to be more than that. To me, that's enough of a confirmation that she feels what's good and she wants to know in her own way, partake of it, even though she might still engage with the big bad apple and all its illusionary pleasures. So I'm just really happy to see that, because I just stayed still. I didn't scramble. I didn't get nervous. I didn't. Many times my knee-jerk reaction was to reach out and like pull her back in and to condemn everything that she was being exposed to. It was at the tip of my tongue on so many occasions. But I restrained myself in order to let her fly free. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of free flying that she's going to do between now and, you know, the time she settles into whoever she's ultimately going to become. But that's just something I thought I'd share. Just like stay steady and believe in your children's ability to discern and just be a shining example, because that's really all you can be at a certain stage when they need to have the freedom to fly.
Wow, Natalia, I feel like it feels like the next stage of evolution as parents, because I feel in order for you to do something like that requires you to be breaking a pattern that has existed between parents and children for a long, long time. You know, this has been this pattern where the parents see the behavior of the children, they condemn it, they don't allow it, they really do what their best to constrain it. And then the children just go off and rebel and, you know, do whatever they can to get as far away from their parents as possible. This just feels like such a new approach. It's like, okay, let's have faith in the process. Let's have faith in them. Let's have faith in ourselves that the example that we've provided is strong enough to, even if it's just not in the moment, but in the long run, it's going to be strong enough for them to come back to. That takes a lot of courage, and I really admire what you're doing there, because I think about your daughter, and it's like that for us. If you don't experience things firsthand, and someone's just telling you, you know, blah blah blah, do this, don't do that, this feels like this feels like that, you still want to experience those things. So by giving her that freedom from at this point, even you know at 13. You're allowing her to just sort of dabble in it enough where she can make her own opinions and come back with so much more resolve about what it is that she believes is true. So I think it's brilliant, and I know that it must take a lot of strength and work on your part to stay in that space of believing that it's going to work out, you know?
Yeah. Well, there were times like she has some friends with famous parents. And there was one in particular, she said to me, she goes, Mom, so-and-so, mother of one of her friends who's a household name, she just said, and who is not necessarily what I would want for her in the future, qualities I would not want for her. She says, Mom, she's my idol. And in that moment, I was like, oh, my God, what is that? What's this all coming to, you know? And I just stayed steadfast, and I just smiled, and I didn't say what I really wanted to say, you know. I just smiled and nodded and, like, you know, let her be at it, and things like that, you know, and you just think, I've completely lost her. This is really, this is what she sees as a good thing, then I don't know what the point is of her actually being my daughter, because what I have to offer her, it does not line up with this. But anyway, just anecdotally, but we can take some questions.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead and press 1 if you have a question. We did have something come in before the call that we can talk about while you're all brewing with your questions or comments or anything that's coming up in your life. One question that came in, Natalia, beforehand was around the actual beginning of a family and how to reconcile or handle differences in when people are ready to begin the family. So if the woman's ready but the man's not, or vice versa, any insights that we might have on how to handle that. And also, if you have experienced this in your life, please share, because I think this comes up a lot. And I notice it not just for the first child, but a lot of people, once they have children, one wants more and the other one doesn't want more. And so this is definitely a big topic and something to consider. I don't know if you have any thoughts offhand. Or if you want to sit with it for a sec, but
that's a tricky one. That's one that's been presented before. I mean, the only thing that comes to mind is that it's such a sacred process, and part of what we, one of the cycle that we're trying to help humanity come out of is just this mindlessly conceiving. So there's the mindless conception when, you know, you're getting pregnant because you're not planning on it. And then there is the hyper attentive to, you know, because you can't get pregnant, or because you so want to have the accessory, or the status of being a parent, that you create a baby for those reasons. What we're trying to get to is a sacred conception that so transcends anything that, you know, would be fall in those categories. So it seems to me that wherever there's resistance from one partner, you're not going to have a sacred, the highest form of or potential of sacred conception. And it also can dishonor the one or the other. I would say, you know, I'm more inclined to say we dishonor the one who doesn't want to have a baby more than the other, but it's certainly, you know, a wish is a wish, and if, you know, you want to have more children, it's just, you know, it's interesting because in my family, my husband would keep having children to the day he dropped dead. I mean, he just cannot get it. I mean, honestly, like, he would, and I have no interest in that. I'm, you know, as much as I love families and I love life force, I know that, perpetuation of the species is part of our evolution, and families are wonderful, and we're here singing the praises of families. Not all of us is cut out to have a lot of children, and yeah. I don't even know that I'm cut out to have a lot of children. I just happen to feel like I have a lot of children. I'm on the brink of sending him to go get clipped. He doesn't feel very good about that.
Yeah.
And I told him, well, if it's about the fact that he's, like, concerned that he wants to maybe someday have more with another woman, then he must just go get some frozen or something, because, you know, it's too nerve-wracking. It also interferes with the sacredness of lovemaking if you're, you know, always worried about whether or not you're going to be falling pregnant or creating a baby. It's a really tricky one. Amanda, I just pass it on to you.
Yeah, I feel it's tricky too, but I'm definitely leaning towards what you're saying, because I just feel like, and anyone who has children knows, having kids is a really, really big deal, like massive, and it stays. You know, it's not like something that, you know, you it's a project that you work on that just is over at some point. No, it's like it's every day, all day, and so. If someone is not ready, one thing I would just suggest is maybe to spend some time evaluating with that person, you know, with your partner, why. And if there's some underlying fears that could be addressed and assisted in clearing, that could be awesome. That could be a great way to do it, and then maybe the person will feel more ready. So a lot of men have a concern. Well, I need to have my finances set up. I need to have a home, and to a certain extent, there's some validity in that, and it can be something that is just a stall tactic that you'll never really be ready. So it's sort of just evaluating what might be underneath those kinds of objections and getting to the fear that's under that, because there could be things to explore from that person's family or childhood. And if it goes unexplored, then there's going to be resentment. And there's going to be that feeling of, well, geez, you know, I wasn't ready for this. And now look, the weight of the world's on my shoulders as I'm having to provide for this child that I wasn't even ready to have. So it's just not the best way to enter into creating a family. And the other thing is we have time. Like, we don't have to rush into things. We don't have to four things before they're ready, and we don't really have to subscribe to the idea that there's only this small window of time that we can have kids, and after that, it's, you know, it's done. And I think that's one of the things so many of us are learning from the cleansing lifestyle, is that window is bigger than we thought before, and that pressure that maybe we feel from others or feel just maybe from expectations we had about what we thought our life was going to look like, we can let go of some of those things and just... Mm-hmm. Think in a little bit to when is really the best time. And really, it seems to me like the best time is when both people are ready. or at least ready enough. I mean, you're never going to be like, oh, yes, I got it. I can totally do this. But so, yeah, we do have a couple hands raised. So let's hear from the crew.
All right.
Lisi. Oh, yay. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, my gosh. So great to hear your voice.
Oh, thanks. It's great to hear yours. Amanda, I've been thinking about you so much lately. All these things that are coming up for me lately, I feel like, you know, we touched on a lot in the Avatar group and just we always touch on these types of things. But well, the conversation you guys just ended is always hilarious to me because, of course, here we have our surprise number 4 child on the way, which my husband is the one that was, you know, like 100% certain that we were not going to have any more children. But he was dragging his feet on getting a vasectomy, and we ended up with being pregnant, which, of course, I feel like is actually very meant to be and wonderful. But I also, like what Natalia was just saying about, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted him to get, or why we were talking about the vasectomy is because I do feel like it interferes, you know, when you have that worry and you just can't, it does interfere with your lovemaking. But anyway, I have so many things I could say right now. But one of the main things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is we went to Oklahoma. I'm sorry, I'm on a walk with my dog, and hopefully there's not too much background noise. But we went to Oklahoma for Christmas, and there's just so much there that's wrong in my head. And this is the word actually that it's wrong for me to use this word wrong which I recognize, but it's like I came back and I felt like I want to change everything. I want to turn our entire lives upside down. I can't do anything traditionally anymore because just being there and being the way that they all live and, you know, with the over-the-counter medication, the prescription medication, and the horrible diets, and the, you know, the way that the kids are raised, and everything. It's just, I was like, oh my God, get me out of here. And it made me want to just radically move in a direction even further than I've gone. And not that we live that radically, but, you know, I was talking to my husband about, like, wanting to, you know, change out of any type of traditional schooling. And, you know, of course, he starts freaking out when I start giving him these big speeches about how I want everything to change. But, you know, I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at. And I don't know what my specific question is, but I do love the intro that you guys gave and the kind of, you know, because I think one of my problems is wanting, you know, I always have this tendency to want to try to over-control my children. Not that I actually am capable of doing that whatsoever, because I'm not in there. But I want to, you know, when I watch them, on Sunday, I came around the corner and I found one of my son's flag football games. I came around the corner and found my son and his friend with this, like, smorgasbord of every bad candy and everything else in front of them that his friend had bought at the snack bar and was sharing with my son. Like, I have to just swallow my thoughts and walk away. Like, anyway, but so I guess, you know, it's just in terms of, I guess what I'm looking for is just support in terms of this transition. I think I am waking up more and more and more. And I really struggle sometimes with what my kids are exposed to, what my family is exposed to, what they're learning from, you know, other people. And it really bothers me. And I start, and that's where I, like, want to go away and live on a farm and not interact with society for several years. But I know that that's not going to happen. And I don't know. That's just sort of where I'm at. So Sorry for the incredible tangent that I just went on.
No, Lucy, Natalia, do you mind if I jump in?
Please, yeah.
Okay, I actually wanted to, I'm going to put you on mute just for the background noise.
But, yeah, sorry.
Okay, hold on one sec. Okay, I actually wanted to host an ad hoc avatar group call because of your posting about this very topic. And I was thinking, whoa, I want to reach out to her and have a conversation about this. Well, first of all, and something you didn't just say, is the farm that Lucy wants to, has this vision of her family living on, has a lots of horses. And I don't know if you realize this, but this is the Chinese year of the horse. And so when I saw that, I was like, whoa, you know, she's totally in sync. This is the year of the horse, and she's having all these, like, super strong pulls to be surrounded by horses, which is just awesome. But one thing I was just going to suggest when you're speaking with your husband, and what I noticed in what you just said and then also in what you posted, is a lot of fears come up with him because he feels like, okay, great, you know, we're going to move and it's going to make it even harder for me to provide for this family. And you know, so he goes into the fear and he goes into feeling the burden. And if you are presenting your quote-unquote case to him as a reaction to what you observe in Oklahoma or what you observe going on in the world, it's not going to have this underlying feeling of love or hope or enthusiasm. It's going to be more of your fears kind of interacting with his fears, and that's the vibration of the conversation. So what I was thinking is that it would probably be much more effective for you to sit in the space of what vision is pulling me for this family? What am I seeing that is possible for this family? And how would that look for him? How would that look for me? How would that look for the children? And stay in that place of this is what's possible, and this is what would be amazing for us. And I feel that it would be amazing for you too. Here's what, you know, what you've always wanted to do, X, Y, and Z. Maybe if we went in this direction, you'd be able to do that. Or I don't know the whole situation, but I just know that when we react to something, that is just as much a, basically it's sort of coming from this chaotic and panicked place. And that's not really the soil that we want to be creating the next iteration of our life from. So just sit with that a little bit. I don't know if that's helpful, but I could feel your husband and just he's like, oh God, what is this going to mean? And it felt scary for him and overwhelming. And but I also know where you're coming from, and I know that you do have a vision for your family's life, and that if you can stay in that place, and also, so again, the men are feeling this big heavy weight, right? Because they've been programmed, and it's part of our conditioning that their role and responsibility is to financially provide, and that's their value. You know, that's really what they bring to the table, which I hope all of us on this phone know that that's not true, but the men are feeling that anyways. And so maybe enter into a space more where you are co-creating with him versus saying, you know, this, and this. It's more like, okay, how could we do this together, and how could I make you feel more comfortable and more excited about this, and do you feel like you could even get there? Is that even possible? So, and I don't know, Natalia, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think having a vision is like primary, and I think it's something that a lot of us forget that we can do because we get so pulled into the day-to-dayness of running the family that we don't often stop to see what it is exactly we want to create and are not necessarily deliberate about it. I mean, that's microcosmic and macrocosmic. We don't often do that for ourselves, our own lives, and then take time to do that for the family. I think that, you know, what's helpful too for men is often to the concept of strategizing and putting things down on paper. So women often are the dreamers, and men tend to like to put things in you know, hard and fast terms. So maybe laying that out, like being laying out what the vision is, specifically, maybe broadly, in the big scope of the dream, and then what it looks like as a day-to-day experience, you know, and sort of what really is expected of him. It may be that he's just not really sure exactly what's expected of him. And it's funny because you'd think that after having three children, a man knows what's expected of him, I think with each child, it's so different. And, you know, you're really walking into no man's land sometimes with, you know, with each one of them and what the family then becomes. I mean, I'll tell you, when I'm with my two, with my big kids, my husband, we have a completely different dynamic than we have when the baby's with us. And so it's not only changing your relationship with your husband when you have another baby, but it's changing the whole family dynamic. You know, the kind of the attention that the kids get is shifted. The things that you can do changes. You know, like there's so many things that we think we were ready to do, you know, go on ski trips and travel to Europe and all this stuff. And now we, you know, I don't have any interest in, you know, other than a big trip, like we go to South Africa every year. Other than that, I have really no interest in getting in an airplane with the baby, you know, even though she's almost two. To me, that's something that I'd rather just avoid doing at all costs. So many things get sidelined, and I don't necessarily want to leave her alone either. I don't want to leave her without, you know, without me in a city that anything can happen at any given time. So, I mean, my situation is, you know, personal for me, but it, you can just, you know, imagine how this kind of thing can play out in every family as a new child comes to the picture. But ultimately, I think with each child, I've only seen families blossom. I've only seen children who are more self-centered become more loving, become more expansive, gain skills that they would never otherwise have. Ultimately, it's always a sort of an upgrade to everyone's abilities and qualities and things. But it doesn't, you know, it's just very, really throwing a wrench in the works in many cases in the, you know, in the in-between time. I don't think that was helpful, though. Sorry. No.
I think it was. The other thing I was going to say is in terms of that vision, and men, I mean, a lot of them are really visual too. So exposing them to as much media or books or whatever your husband's into that show another way and show what's possible. So for example, that TED Talk, Natalia, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it. There was
I saw it many months ago, whenever it came out. Yes, I know the one.
Yeah. So it's like a 13 or 14-year-old boy, and his parents took him out of traditional school when he was 9, and he's been homeschooled since then, and the kid's like phenomenal. I mean, it's incredible the maturity and the he could be leading this call. He's amazing. And so just exposing your husband to those other ways, because maybe he can't see it. He wasn't raised that way. He doesn't know people who were raised that way. So sometimes it can be really scary to just venture into the unknown when you aren't even holding a picture of what that might look like. So just some suggestions. I hope that helps, Lacey. And we do have some other hands raised, so let's jump into that. Okay. Kristen, aloha.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
So hi.
Nice to hear your voice too.
Hi, Amanda and Natalia. So good to hear you guys. It's been quite a few months. And Lacey, too. Hi, Lacey. And I'm sure there are so many other people that I know on this call. I'm just excited to be with you guys today. So thank you for everything that you're saying. I think that I know that I can resonate with it. And I'm sure everybody on the call can, because there's just been such a major shift, a major energy shift that I know I have gone through in the last month and the last 2 months too, and just really can relate to what Lacey was saying, where just all of a sudden, it's like, for me, it was as drastic as like I just woke up and every single part of my life didn't feel congruent anymore. It's like everything has to change. And at first it's kind of scary because you don't know what that means, but you know, little by little, I'm just kind of you know, expanding that vision and understanding what that means. And so my hold on just a second. I'm kind of wondering, like, I'd like to get your view a little bit. It's just a lot of the same stuff that Natalia, that you're familiar with, that I've been going through a lot with my daughter Ellie, who is 4, and just with eating and with how sensitive she is, and it's just a lot of the same stuff coming up, and how I'm really up on understanding everything that you were talking about with the EGD and how we have to be more vigilant in understanding all of that, and I understand that. But it seems that at the same time, I've been moving into my daughter's diet being like more acidic and finding her thriving a lot more off of that. And just so many confusing things like that, and trying to understand what is ideal and understand the basic principles of life regeneration, but at the same time also following my instincts. And so I just kind of wanted to hear kind of what you guys think about that, because I want to give her all this life-generating food, but it seems like when she eats more dense protein foods like cheese, yogurt, nuts, that then she is more vibrant.
Interesting. Maybe it's because she feels that she has more options. Maybe it's more an emotional thing and a mental thing than a physiological thing. But physiologically, first of all, we're not talking about very dense proteins. Those are not seriously dense proteins. They're animal proteins. They're denser than the amino acids you're going to get in greens. But we're not talking about giving her chicken or chicken with hormones and that sort of thing. So she's having her organic yogurt, and you said cheese and yogurt? Is that right?
Yeah, she's just having goat and sheep cheese and goat yogurt, but it's not organic. But it's like what we can find at our normal grocery stores.
Right. Well, you know, goat and sheep cheeses are going to be less fooled around with than, you know, it's not like they're having the same kinds of big farms that the inorganic milk is coming from. But, I don't really see there being a problem with that. You're saying that she's more energy and seems more vivacious after that than she does after having butternut squash?
Yes. She can't have, it just seems like anything with sugar at all, like any high sugar stuff. So even if it's vegetables, if it's higher in sugar, it seems to affect her. And I just maybe didn't notice it before. Maybe she's gone through a shift too, because I definitely know she's gone through an energetic shift in the last couple months. I've seen a lot of changes with her. And
I would have to know more. I mean, the thing is that there is sugar in milk products. It's a milk sugar. It's a lactose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know that it's not all entirely making sense to me the way I'm getting it right now, but I don't know that we can really get very, like, myopic dietetically, and it's unnecessary. You know, if she's doing well and she's taking things that make her feel good, and she's, you know, even if she's having things that are slightly mucus-forming, like, you know, the sheep and goat cheeses and yogurts, if she's not becoming symptomatic, if she's not getting constipated, and she's not having colds and flus to get the mucus out, then, everyone's different. Yeah, sorry?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, she's like, she's totally healthy, and her elimination seemed to even improve the more that we've changed her diet like that. I mean, she does drink green juice and all of that too, so she is getting, and, you know, and we grow our own sprouts and stuff like that. I mean, she is getting all of that too. It's just not like as typical as what other children seem to be eating, like all the fruits and vegetables and starches and...
There's nothing out of the ordinary, it sounds like, with what you're giving her.
Okay.
I mean, you're giving her great things, sprouts and goat cheese. And, I mean, it's all her. As long as she's not symptomatic and she's got great energy, I mean, we're all individuals. So there's this sort of big cornucopia of foods that we can choose from, and some of us gravitate more towards certain of them, and others of us will gravitate more towards others among them. And that's all totally appropriate.
Yeah,
sounds like you're in the picture, and I think it should be celebrated. It sounds like you've found your sweet spot, her sweet spot.
Okay.
Totally. And
thank you,
Kristen. Yeah, trust your intuition on that. And I just want to, Natalia was talking about how
people are different. I have two daughters, and Madeline has always expressed a desire and interest in eating meat, and Sophia won't have anything to do with it. She's like barely even put it on her tongue. She just is totally not into it. But so we, with Madeline, we've just allowed some super, super clean, local, sacredly, is that a word, hunted, that we have this very, very special, it's called Atlas deer on this island. And it's like the man who hunts it does it in a sacred way, and it's all, you know, it feels really good. And so we're allowing her to have that like once a week or once a month. It just depends on the access to it. And she loves it, and it seems to really be great for her. And so I just watched that, you know, what she gravitates towards it. Sophia doesn't. It's fine as long as it's clean, and I watch their bodies and their movements and their mucus and all that just to make sure everything's good. And it is. And there's going to be lots of different opinions and ideas and ideals, and we mothers just want to continue working to come back to our intuition and being able to trust our own voice. So sounds like you're doing that, and all good. Yeah, we have another hand raised. Let's go to Laura. Laura, aloha.
Aloha. Can you hear?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay, great. I guess going back to the pregnancy topic, something came up kind of on the other end of the spectrum from what we were discussing. And I'm just, it's been weighing heavily on my mind, and I'd just be interested in any comments that the two of you would have. So I have a daughter, 20, and she's in college. And through discussions with her and her working through some things, and she's in a really good spot, I'm learning it's unbelievable the number of young women on birth control pills.
Mm-hmm.
She is, of all of her friends, in college and high school and going back to childhood, the only one not on the pill. And these are girls from across the country, private school, public school, religious school, home school, across the board. It doesn't matter. And I've just been alarmed and astounded. I had no idea. I had somewhat of an idea just from my own friends who have daughters the same age and us talking about it. But I'm just, it's really alarming because this is affecting a whole future generation of babies to be born and how they'll be born and what circumstances they'll be born into. And I don't know. I'm just curious if you have a perspective on that. It also makes it very difficult when you're 20 and you're the only one not, and that's a whole other set of circumstances, and I think my daughter's doing a great job of working through that. But it's really an interesting phenomenon.
It really is. I'm glad you brought it up. It's one of the most devastating things basically undermine, is to pull the female body under, if ever there was anything. It wreaks havoc on every level, not just on the ovaries and uterus and sexual glands, but on the blood itself. The blood actually is transformed in a very negative way by the birth control pill. So many pathogens can take hold when this frenzy yeast feeding medication or a hormone concoction is introduced to the female body. It's a mega underminer. So she's doing the right thing, obviously. I was on the pill for a long time. It messed me up in so many different ways. It has short and long term effects. You know, it can be hard to find the one that is most copacetic with the body to begin with, even though none of them are good for the body. One might make you bleed excessively. One might be too low a dosage. There's so many issues, and playing around to find the right one is a big part of the problem too. But typically, the birth control pill mostly undermines the person taking it. The impact is not to say that it's non-existent for the baby. It is definitely on many levels an issue, especially when we take into consideration lineage. So the baby's receiving the biochemistry of its mother, of course, and its father. But things like radiation are really have the biggest implications for our progeny, for our offspring. And that's so really in this conversation, when you bring up something on birth control and it's the problems, we also have to look at radiation. We're going to talk about the imposition on the future generation and cell phone usage and wired classrooms. In fact, in Europe, I know in France, well, from the latest I've heard, watching the news recently, sometimes I watch RT, Russian television, just because they give a different perspective. I'm not saying they're non-biased. They have their issues. They have their problems, like every modern news source seems to have. But I do get alternative news from them. And apparently France has decided to go back to cables rather than the free wiring, what is it called, the wireless connections, because of the research and what's been discovered. And in the small print, I mean, this is one of those things like cigarettes that is going to come out in whether it's, 2, 5, 10 years, it's going to be the next big, that company, the Morris? Not William
Philip
Morris.
Philip Morris,
thank you. William Morris is an agency. Philip Morris, right. Remember, all the lawsuits that rained down on Philip Morris with regard to cigarette smoking. Well, the same thing is going to happen with radiation. But then, you scratch your head and you say, well, couldn't people have seen through the smoking before? Do they really have to blame Philip Morris? I mean, can't they just take responsibility for themselves? But the ads, they were saying, this cigarette is so harmonious with your throat. It's going to feel so good to you. And these are doctors saying it. And there's, there's all the ads from the 50s, 60s, 70s probably too. But there's a point when they just, turn things around. Well, the same thing's going to happen with cell phones. And cell phone providers, cell phone creators, whether it's Samsung, iPhone, all these guys have this information in the small print, but you have to go through layers of information on the cell phone and know where to find it to even see it. But as far as they're concerned, legally, they're covered. But this wireless C is the most devastating situation we have right now. It's the most devastating imposition to the next generation. And we have to, say no. I mean, I'm living in a building in New York City, so it's kind of ridiculous to even contemplate switching off your own wireless if you're in a building of wireless instead of a city that's wireless. So you're getting it. You're here, you're getting it. But and it's just devastating to the whole system. And we're getting out. I know, obviously, we're getting out of here. We are getting out of here. For whatever reason, the universe still has me here. So I believe that we can transcend these things, too. They're not. Having this knowledge is not meant to get us into fear. It's about recognizing what's happening so that we can transcend it. And I can say that my connection with Source is as strong here in this wired apartment, in this wired city, with a constant hum running through it, as it is anywhere. Put me in the African bush, I have the same connection, because the connection comes from within, and we can overcome anything if our connection with Source is strong enough. But if we're living cut off from Source and we're living our day by day and we're in a lower consciousness, functioning in mainstream consciousness, those things will affect us because we have no power. So your daughter has so much power just in this expression that she's choosing to do things differently, and she mm-hmm. can channel that power even higher. And, overcome things. We can overcome radiation, but the point is not to have to. The point is not to have to put ourselves in situations where we have to do this. And I look forward to having an unwired household eventually. But, my children are in schools that are totally wired. And, so here I am in many ways, and I'm in no way trying to defend myself. I'm as hypocritical as they come you know, that we can sit here and talk about it and know about it. And, you know, that old saying, to know something is a sin and to do it anyway is like the worst sin of all. So I've got my kids at these fancy private schools in New York City that are totally wired. My son has his homework on his iPad. You know, so and the Twitch, of course, came back once again, Tommy and the Twitch. So it's, you know, there are these, but we look forward to the changes we're going to make. We can see what's in front of us. We're not unconscious of, with regard to it. And we also can use our power of transcendence to neutralize anything that would do us harm. So we got a little off topic there. Hope that's okay.
No, it's great. It puts it in perspective.
Yeah, and Laura, I just as you were speaking, I was also thinking, you know, if this is an issue that's touching you somewhere deeply and that you're experiencing in your life and you're feeling a lot of passion around, perhaps you and your daughter will be part of a movement that helps to educate people about what's actually happening. And maybe if you feel called to help, because I think that for so many people it is simply like the smoking thing. It's like, what? How could you not know? Well, there's really a lot of people out there that really just don't realize how devastating that that drug is. And so maybe there's a call for you here. Maybe there's some sort of movement or some sort of participation that you could play, especially with a 20-year-old daughter. I mean, that's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
to come forth and say, hey, look, we don't have to do it this way. A, we don't have to be having sex just because everyone's having sex. B, we can really honor and hold our bodies sacred by not putting this substance into us from an early age. So, you know, maybe there's something here for you to explore.
Well, that's a really good thought. It's been a topic that my daughter and I are close, but it's made us even closer. And to have such a candid discussion and deep discussions. And to be able to help her, I guess one of the things I feel so that makes me feel badly is that there's got to be other 20-year-olds out there in the same situation, and it's just so isolating, you know. It's just hard to be by yourself.
Yes, and there's a lot of strength in that, and there's a lot of strength of spirit. And yes, it can be difficult. But those times where she stands on her own, trusting her instincts and trusting what she knows is best, those are what can make those experiences are going to be what makes her, as a mom, she's going to be able to choose different things for her children, even though no one else is doing it. As a wife, as a business person, as a whatever she ends up being, she's going to be able to stand in that strength because she's already been through it at such a young age, which is really cool. Most of us don't have that experience. So,
I love that. Yeah. That is just a great perspective. I love that. Thank you.
Yes. You're welcome. Yeah, it can be challenging, but these are the things that make us strong and make us unique. And anyone who's ever done anything amazing in this world and helped to change the status quo has never been someone who's worried about being the only one saying it. So she's a leader.
Right.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, very good. I just want to add one more thing to that, and that is that, you know, when girls think that they're going to take the pill and have sex and it's all going to be fine, they're twice undermining themselves, first with the pill and second with sex. When a young woman says that she's not going to take the pill and she's not going to have sex, she's honoring herself doubly. And, I mean, that's just as cool as it gets. To honor yourself is so much cooler than to just say, I'm going to do what everyone else is doing. Because really, the pill is only the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
One in four, it could be more, but like one in four sexually active people has herpes. So, you know, that's just one thing. I mean, there's so many sexually transmitted diseases out there. There's so many things that she's, you know, that her friends are exposing themselves to, not even understanding what they're exposing themselves to. They just want to do what everyone else is doing because they don't know how to stand alone. You've taught her, you raised her in a way that she has the capacity, in a way, it sounds like almost effortlessly to stand alone. It's like it's her nature to stand on her own and be okay with that. And if, you know, if we can give our children nothing else but that, to see what's right and do it because it feels, because it's not intimidating to them to stand in truth, I mean, that is parented into the max. So well done.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. All right,
thank
Laura.
You.
Thank you so much. Okay. This topic of young women feeling like they need to have sex is just, like, the more and more I learn about the true intention of sex and the sacredness around the whole thing and the power that's inherent in it, and then just to think about from such an early age as just sort of doing it because everyone's doing it and all that, it's sad. And there's so much potential there for humanity and for women to really lead the way in that awareness of what it's for and why we even have it and what it can create. So young women like Laura's daughter that are standing out on their own like that is hopeful for all of us and for our, you know, I have two young daughters. I love that there's a 20-year-old out there saying, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I'm not into that. It doesn't feel right. And that she's paving the way for young women like my 5 and 2-year-old right now. So very cool. We have a few more minutes. Sorry, Natalia, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking about how I think how else is a young girl going to know and learn how to honor herself if she doesn't learn from her mother? You know, and if her mother's on the picture, then from some other women around her. Because, you know, you can kind of get an idea if your father honors himself. You get an idea. But there's nothing like seeing your mother honor herself for that to be your sort of your go-to download of how you treat yourself, even when you see people doing different things. So we have to do it for our daughters. We not do it for them because we're doing it for ourselves and it feels good and it feels right. But, you know, it can sometimes seem indulgent or prissy to others if you really take care of yourself, you really honor yourself, and you take pride in what you put in your body. Not pride in a prideful sense, but like you really care and you're mindful about what you put in your body, because what you put in your mouth and what you put in other orifices of your body kind of goes hand in hand. You know, you either honor your body as a whole or you dishonor it as a whole. I don't know anyone who is, careful and mindful about what they consume and where it's grown and how it's procured and prepared, who turns around and is totally haphazard and carefree or careless about where they, you know, what they do with other orifices of their body.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and this word sacrifice keeps coming into my mind as you're speaking, and it's like this sacrifice means to hold sacred. So in essence, there's this sacrifice of being like everyone else. You know, you're sacrificing the being like everyone else. You're sacrificing the cavalier sex, you know, all those things to hold sacred your body. And to hold sacred what you believe sexuality is about, and to hold sacred this, you know, opportunity to live in this body temple. So it's awesome. it's really good stuff. We have a few more minutes if anyone has any more questions or topics that they want to bring up.
I'm going to have one
on your keypad. Go ahead, Natalia.
I mean, it seems to me that we need to make more of a message, send more of a message out about, especially to the young girls, about sexuality. I don't think we get into it enough. And I think in many ways we do these young girls a disservice by not speaking out about it, because, you know, there's sort of the religious approach of abstinence, which is all about guilt and shame and don't do it because we said don't do it. And, you know, and then there's the world's approach, which is do whatever you want to do because everybody else is doing everything and anything and doesn't matter, you know, everything's thrown to the wind. And it seems like there needs to be a message sent out about the sacredness and the honor that needs to be given to sexuality for young women, as young women are concerned. And it seems like we need to maybe put a message out there so there's an alternative message that can resonate even when these other two messages don't. It's that old saying of, you know, when someone gives you two choices, always take the third. I think we need to offer a third choice in a way.
I do too. It's interesting because I have a few teenagers in my life and we've had a lot of in-depth conversations about
about sex and the potential for it and what it might mean if they were to approach it differently. And what's interesting is they get met with so much resistance from their boyfriends or from the young men in their lives that it just, I've seen that it's really difficult for them to do anything different. And yes, we want to be raising young girls that are strong enough to not care about that. But I'm seeing in practice that it's a really, really big issue because the guys, the young men, they don't, and I definitely shouldn't make a sweeping statement. I'm sure there's some young men like that boy that spoke at that TEDx talk that would probably totally get it. But the messaging of, you know, hold out until you find a young man who actually gets that this is intended for something so much more powerful than this, just, you know, let's get drunk and have sex, or let's just have it because I feel like it and every impulse I just give into. And also a young man that would actually understand that he's demeaning his own power. He's undermining his own ability to cultivate his energy by treating it so cavalier. So it seems like a dual effort. Like we definitely need to be speaking to the young women, but we also need to be speaking to the young men so that, and hopefully there's, I really hope there's some older men that are appealing to young boys that are spreading this message. But there's very few adult men that understand the power of sex and the sacredness of sex and the different ways that they could be approaching it to make it even more pleasurable, more fulfilling, all of that. So, yeah, this is a loaded topic to bring up with 2 minutes left in the call.
It's also interesting, too, about the guys is that, you know, one thing that most people don't realize is that sexual energy is not necessarily to be used for procreation or for sexual orgasm. It's mostly intended to be used for creativity at large. So, and for strengthening the functions of the body. So when it can be directed toward the function of the body or to mental creativity or carpentry or screenwriting or composing a concerto, whatever it is, like those are the things that can be used towards. And so I think a lot of young people don't even know what to do with themselves. So they tend to have sex because it's kind of like something that people do. It's part of a relationship. It's part of lifestyle. It's part of all these things. They're part of our culture. But when it's understood that sexual energy, despite how strong it is and despite how strong the drive feels to do something with it on a purely sexual intercourse kind of level, that it can actually be channeled into something higher. I think young teenage boys and 20-year-old, 20-something young men would be inspired to know that they can take that sexual energy that seems to almost feel like a plague sometimes because they don't have a girlfriend and they don't, want to dishonor themselves. And they don't want to be, a horny guy. They would like to be something more than that, but they don't really understand that because it's not taught to them. So I think the information needs to get out there, is that sexual energy is for more than just sexual intercourse and orgasm. It's about something much bigger, and then guys can use it to channel into higher expressions, and they'll know what to do with it. Because as it is today, they don't know what to do with the energy.
Totally. It's no question. No question. And they don't feel fulfilled from the way that it's happening either. There may be the temporary fulfillment, but I feel like so many of us have like a deep cellular understanding of the power of it. And so when it's not meeting that expectation, there's a knowing, and then there's a underlying unfulfillment with that. So I think, you know, if anyone has any suggestions or ideas or ways that they've approached this conversation with their teenage daughters or sons or nieces and nephews or young children, young people in their lives, let's circulate ideas about it, because it really does feel like a big responsibility, or as the Hawaiians say, a big kuleana, a responsibility and joy, to really start to plant new seeds in terms of what this could mean for people.
because it's such a massive issue. I mean, it's a big problem. So,
yeah.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for bringing this up, and thank you, everyone, for being on this call today. It was really, really awesome to hear your voices and to hear what's going on in your lives and to use that as the content for the call. So we encourage you to do that more. Just an announcement, we're going to be doing these calls once a season or once a quarter if you're in the business world. So we're minimizing the amount of calls. So make sure that when you do come to the calls that you bring your questions and be ready for a really lively and engaging conversation, because that's why Natalia and I are having these calls. So anything else that you wanted to end with?
It's funny, it all came full circle from like babies to the origin of how babies are conceived. I guess it's totally apropos. Love to everyone, to all those gorgeous babies, the ones that have been birthed recently, the ones that are being incubated now, the ones that are turning into toddlers and kids and teenagers and, you know, and adults. I mean, it's just, we're all children at heart, and we're all one big family at heart. So it's beautiful,
awesome.
And I love you.
Amazingly said, off the top of your head. Beautiful. Love to everybody, and can't wait to connect in the spring. We'll update you as to when that call will be. So stay tuned and take care, and continue to send questions via Facebook or to me via email. That works too. All right. Aloha.
Okay, lots of fun. Aloha.